Accession number 28675, Mr. Eric Smith, Real 7. Now, we were talking about, you know, we're onto the breakout, really, now. We're starting the breakout from Falaise.
Yes, that's right.
You've talked about this time where you were temporarily cut off and had to escape. Anything else in this period that you recall? Any other stories of what was going on? I presume you had the union had to be, in a sense, rebuilt after all those losses.
I was just going to say, after the ambush, just before the breakout, we were down to, I think, 4 tanks in the squadron. A whole regiment was knocked about badly. And we got reinforcements. There were no reinforcements. They were so short of men that they broke up a regiment, the North Hants Yeomanry.
How did they fit in?
Oh, well, yes. So we got 3 troops from the North Hants Yeomanry into our squadron. But poor devils never got sort of indoctrinated properly, because a day or two later we were off on the Swan, breaking out from the bridgehead.
Now, what do you remember about the breakout?
Well, it was so hectic. Jerry left an odd anti-tank gun here and there, but once that was sort of dealt with, we swanned on through village after village. And our objective, I say, was we loaded up with ammo and petrol and food, and we were told to go as far as we could and ignore any sort of opposition, get round it some way. And the infantry or those following up would deal with it. And our objective was Belgium, which was 200 miles from the bridgehead, which is a long way. And of course, petrol consumption, as you can imagine, we were only doing about a mile to a gallon. And they decided that they'd only use what they called us the Ghent Force.
Ghent
Force. Just the 5th Tanks would take part. So we got all the lorries from the 1st Battalion, the 5th Inniskilling Dragoons, every available lorry was allotted to us, full of petrol, to follow us. Because the consumption was thousands of gallons a day. Which I've got in writing, actually. And we just pushed on and pushed on, stopped in the odd village and got a great reception. People came from everywhere and said, Germans are here, Germans are there. The FFI, as you call them, the resistance people, jumped on board and wanted us to go here and go there. And who was I driving then? Oh, Hargreaves, young officer called Hargreaves. Oh, he said, we can't deviate, we're on the centre line. And that's how it went on all the way to Ghent, really. The first major place we stopped in for about a few hours was Oudenarde, on the borders of France and Belgium. We stayed there for about just a few hours, and then Ghent was the objective. And we entered the outpost of Ghent on the 4th of September. So it was quite a quick run from the end of August, 200 miles in a tank, driving by day and night. We were absolutely exhausted.
And how did they react, the Belgians, arrived?
They were over the top. French had been a bit mute, but the Belgians, it were hysterical.
In what way? What did they do?
Well, they climbed on the tank, they showered you with fruit and wine and kisses, and it was pandemonium, really. You couldn't move. They were thronged in front of you. You had to sort of start up and tell them to get out of the way. It was unbelievable. After what we'd been through, a yard by yard advance to do what we were doing, you know. We got on the outskirts of Ghent, and it's still there, of course, a historic town. And the orders were not to fight in Ghent, wanted to make it an open city. So our colonel, Holliman, went into blindfolded, taken into Ghent to meet the German commander of the area to discuss surrender terms to open city, to withdraw his troops. All was going fine until someone came in and referred to him as Colonel Holliman. And the major, whoever he was, Major General German, I don't talk to anybody below the rank of mine. So he broke off the talks. We had to wait almost 3 days for somebody of equivalent rank to be brought up to negotiate with him. So we sat in a park, we were in Ghent, for about 3 days, waiting for the town to be surrendered. Then they withdrew to the other side, to a canal. There's a bit of shelling, a bit of fighting, but the engineers unfortunately got caught up as infantry laying a bridge, and they lost a lot of men. 33, I think, they lost on the canal. But there was just shell fire there, not much going on at all. No tanks. We stopped in the town. There were 300 German prisoners in a barracks, which the MF, local resistance people, were keeping an eye on, which we did as well. And we stayed in Ghent for about a week. And then our next move was to Malines, another town. It had already been freed.
In Belgium.
And then while we were there, of course, the airborne went over for Arnhem. Our next move was Eindhoven. So that was quite a trip.
Well, tell us about that.
Then we got on the move, and wait a minute, I'm missing, aren't I? I've gone ahead of myself.
Okay, what's next then?
Back in Ghent. We're in Ghent, and we go down to the docks, quite a bit of shell fire, one or two men killed by airbursts. But I went, lost my mind, I went, collapsed, I don't know.
Battle
exhaustion, they called it. Blacked out. I was removed from the tank, put on a stretcher, and taken to a field hospital.
And how were you treated in the field?
Oh, well, I never got off a stretcher, of course. Beds were stretchers. Treated quite well, yes.
But what did they do?
They drugged me for 48 hours. I slept for more or less 48 hours. And, of course, I was unshaven, filthy. And then, of course, the move, as I say, the division had got to move up towards Eindhoven. So I was put aboard an ambulance with two other fellows, an officer and another man. And we went to Eindhoven by ambulance, myself. Next thing, I find myself in Eindhoven, and come out of hospital, and go into LOB. LOB, left out of battle camp in Eindhoven, in Phillips Works. Actually, we were.
Now, what is a left out of battle? I mean, it's obvious in a way, but what was a left out of battle camp?
Well, fellows that were either like myself had been hospitalised or been wounded and come back, you were left in there until reinforcements were wanted. If a driver went or a gunner went, they'd come back to the LOB camp and collect you. So I spent about, can't recall the exact time, here we are, about, when was Arnhem? About the middle of September this was. I spent about a week or 10 days in this LOB camp, and then one morning an NCO came on parade and said, right, I think four of us, you're going to before a military tribunal. And we went down to, I forget the name of the village, and again it was, I suppose they were doctors, top brass as well, and had all your records and went through your history and asked you questions, all sorts of questions about your youth and all sorts. And then we as we came out, they gave us a sealed envelope, which we took back to the unit. I had to report to the MO. He read
of
it.
Of your own unit?
Of their own unit, straight back to the 5th. And then before the Major, Major MacDonald, who was in command. And he read the report and he said, right, Smith, you're no good to us now. You're unfit for tank service. You've been downgraded. I've been downgraded to B2 from A1. He said, the option is yours. This is absolutely true, what he said to me. The option is yours, he said. At the moment, we're in a friendly country who we've liberated. But our next move is to enemy territory. Every man, woman and child will be armed either with a hand grenade or a gun. So the prospects aren't very good. So your choice, I say to you, is to go LOB. LOC, line of communication, and you'll be sent back to Brussels and regraded and join another regiment. How do you feel about that? I said, not very happy, sir. I've been with the 5th 4 years, and I've taken what's come, and I'd like to stay with the 5th. He said, well, you can't be on a tank. I said, well, I can drive a lorry. So I was given an ammunition lorry for the rest of the war.
So back to the thing you'd originally done.
What I did when I first went in. Yeah, exactly. Ammo. 3-ton ammo lorry.
And
we followed the tanks then to return.
Did you mind that? I mean, you know, in the
end. I was quite happy, really. Yeah.
And what were your duties like with them?
Well, you followed the tanks. Of course, when they moved, you followed them. And if they wanted ammo, you moved up. They'd radio back to the chap in command of the echelon and say, I want ammunition. And you'd move up and replenish them. Not so much as petrol, because petrol was greater demand than ammo. They were using far more petrol than ammunition. So quite often, you'd be 3 or 4 days in the echelon, and the petrol lorries would return to the main echelon to replenish, and we would probably sit there for a week or more.
So you only did ammunition, you didn't do petrol?
Just ammunition, that's all.
And you were with the B echelon?
B echelon and Y packet. Y packet was the one that followed the tanks. Whether that was general Y packet, I don't know, but we called it Y packet. No, about 8 lorries following the tanks.
So can you explain what the B echelon was?
That was usually about 25, 30 miles behind, which held held headquarters, the orderly room, military police, regimental police, reinforcements, mail, dealt with the mail, what they call the orderly room, a mobile lorry with an office in it, etc., pay office, and that was the B echelon, but usually sort of about 25 miles behind.
And the Y packet, now what exactly would the Y packet be?
That would be about two ammo lorries, 3 or 4 petrol lorries, a half track with a doctor in it, MO, an ambulance, and a lorry with spare kit and spare crew. Consists usually about 6 or 8 lorries, Y packet.
So this is, where are we now? We're about late September when you start doing this.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Now, what's the next thing you remember? I mean, obviously it's not quite as... It's more routine now.
Yes, that's right, yes.
But what do you remember?
You're not in touch with the enemy as such.
What do you remember of this period then?
Where are we now? We're into Holland, aren't we? The Eindhoven, and then, of course, the division was ordered forward, but all they did was... corridor duties. You know, we'd gone through, the airborne had gone over and it was still occupied land, so they made a corridor for the troops to go through to get to the airborne. That was the problem. Jerry was coming out with SP vehicles, self-propelled guns, and destroying lorries galore. So we did patrol of the corridor to, you know, the tanks did, I didn't, we sat back in reserve, but the tanks did patrolling of the corridor to keep Jerry away from the column that was going up to replenish the airborne. Very, very precarious operation. I don't know who thought it out, but it was, you know, obviously that it never couldn't be successful.
And what next?
Well, then of course the retreat came. They came out of Arnhem, and then we went back into Belgium.
Whereabouts to?
Place called Bokout, Bergleopold, in the Limburg district of Belgium.
Limburg,
yes. Mostly pine forests and low country.
And what were you doing there? Was that just a waiting period?
Yes, we spent quite a bit of time. The regiment, that was the time coming towards October, November, they realised then that there was, pardon me, there wouldn't be an offensive until we crossed the Rhine. So it was just holding. A lot of the tank crews went as infantry, because infantry were very scarce and short on the ground. So tanks were abandoned and the crews went up as infantry. And we did replenishment. Chaps, I think a duty driver, you'd be on a jeep and you take people to the dentist or sick parade, or, you know, there's always people going sick and dental. Leave had started by then, you see. And that was out of a hat. So you take chaps back to a leave centre.
And you were using the Jeep?
Jeep, yes, just temporarily.
What did you think of the Jeep?
Loved it.
It's such a famous vehicle. Yeah. What was it like to drive? What was good about it?
Well, it got front-wheel drive if you wanted it. Very fast, economical. what do you call it, rigid steering, fun to drive, really. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah, I enjoyed driving a Jeep. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a wonderful vehicle.
What happened next? Right, so
general duties, really. I mean, I say, well, I wasn't in action anymore. It was a question of called upon to do all sorts of things. Another thing I had to do, came one morning, they said, right, get the Jeep, fill up with petrol, make sure it's petrol, oil and tyres, and you're taking two officers down to Ostend, which was quite a run. They were coming home on a course. So that was another trip I did, took about 3 days to Ostend, stayed overnight in Ostend. More or less free for all, you did as you wished, to a certain extent. Coming out of the camp at Ostend, there was a guardsman with his kit. So he said, Tanky, where are you going? So I said, Burg Leopold. Oh, he said, will you give me a lift? Sure, I said. Throw your kit in the back. As we motored on, he said, you got any time to get back? I said, no, I'm not on any, get back when I want sort of business. Oh, he said, I was stationed in Yorkshire before the invasion, and there was a Belgian people there that had a Belgian family staying with them in the First World War. And he said, give me the address. They live in Bruges. Can we stop? Sure, I said. So off we go to Bruges. This is true. And knock on the door, and he makes out who we are. And they said, oh, we're so pleased. We've got tea, bacon and eggs. You can have a nice breakfast. Made us so welcome. They'd spent 2 or 3 years in England in the First World War. So, of course, we settled down there and had quite a nice day. And then got back in the Jeep at night and motored on to get back to Burg Leopold. So I was sort of a free person to an extent. You were stopped here and there by military police. They checked the number, because so many vehicles were getting stolen. They checked the number of the vehicle on a list. They'd got a list of stolen vehicles. Check your credentials to see if you were genuine, and probably ring through to the squadron office that I've got a trooper Smith here. And otherwise, you were left unattended. You know? After being in a tank crew and sort of up the sharp end all the time, it was quite a relief. I quite enjoyed it.
Any other duties?
If that's a word to say. I say dental parade, sick parade, VD parade, which was pretty nasty most days. Chaps with VD, taking them to a clinic for treatment. You'd be general dog's body, really. Duty driver for the day. Took it in turns.
Yeah. You quite enjoyed it.
I did, if that is an appropriate word.
Now, if you weren't duty driver, what would you be doing?
Or playing cards, or sitting around in the billet, wherever you were, there was discipline, but not like training or a depot, everybody was on the same footing. Death was around the corner, you could say. And
so, had things relaxed a bit between the ranks?
Oh, yes. You NCOs were by name, none of this sort of spit and polish, and only if there was a turnout for any parade. We had a turnout in, during the winter, we did an operation with the, that was December, we did an operation up on the River Mars, and that was to support the commandos, commando brigade.
Is that during the Ardennes?
When the colonel, Ardennes time, yeah, when the colonel was killed. The 1st Battalion had done the attack, and then we relieved them. And he went up to reconnoitre the positions, and a shell dropped one of ours and killed him and the driver in a scout car. And then we got an officer from another battalion, Colonel Leakey. He came and took over of us. And, of course, he tried to bring in a bit of discipline, a bit of spit and polish again, but was resented. And we were in a school.
Now, what did you hang on, we're jumping subjects there. What did you think of the new colonel? His name was
Leakey, L-E-A-K. His son is now Major General himself. He finished up a Major General, Leakey.
What did you think of Colonel Leakey?
Well, he was a regular soldier from pre-war, so he was a good tactician. But to compare him with others, we didn't think he was all that. He was very much for discipline, of course, which frightened us. Most chaps' kits were buried in the back of a lorry or the bottom of a tank, and he had us out on parade scrubbing the equipment, etc. And there was quite a do, because we were in this school, and he said, right, be a parade tomorrow with full equipment, blanco, blah, blah, blah. And some wise character amongst us in the school got a blackboard and it got Britain scrubs while Russia bleeds. So of course, that you can imagine that caused a everybody who did it, you know, nobody would own up. Everybody stood man to man. I forget what the discipline. He couldn't do much worse to us. Conditions were pretty horrible. He was a bit spit and polish, and he had his. We didn't like him in a certain way because he was a regular soldier. He'd come to us last part of the war, just before we crossed the Rhine, where most of the sort of main fighting had gone on, and he brought a couple of cronies with him, a major chap who brought up from the ranks, Major Jones. I forget the other chap's name. And both of those, this is true, both of those had got the MC before the war finished in a matter of weeks. And we'd had officers, John Roberts and Lou Jones, who I'd driven, men who'd been through so much, didn't get a mention. So it was a question of, you know, looking after the old boys.
Favouritism. So you preferred Holliman.
Oh, much, much
more.
The one
who'd been killed.
Yeah. Human being, if I can say that.
Now, what happened next then? You're moving up to,
we've got the winter, we're December, the Ardennes was going on, and we're in this, they did this, they were pushing Jerry up to the Rhine, and this was the River Mars, so all pockets of Germans had got to be outed, and the 1st Battalion did the attack. The operation was called Blackcock, January 1945.
Anything happened about that?
And then that's when we took over from the 1st Battalion, when the colonel was killed. It was pretty grim because it snowed, so whitewash came up, and the chaps had to whitewash the tanks to blend in with the snow. And about 4 days later it thawed and it wanted to be washed off again. Quite a bit of hostility over there. But we were lucky, really. 1st Battalion had lost quite a few tanks on mines. Waterlogged, you see, and he laid mines extensively. So the 1st had lost quite a few men. But I didn't take part because I wasn't driving a tank.
You had a different role then, yeah.
Completely, yeah.
So what happened next?
Well, they finished that battle, cleaned up the area. Then we pulled back. That was January. And we pulled back to a village in Holland called Weert.
How do you spell
it? W-E-E-R-T. W-E-E-R-T. Weert. There the regiment sort of regrouped and started courses. They immediately got off, they started gunnery and, you know, keeping them occupied, I suppose, the main theme, gunnery and cleaning up generally. We spent, at the end of January, we spent about 6 weeks there getting ready for the crossing of the Rhine, which was the end of March.
So nothing much you remember?
No, I just took people on leave. Leave had started before Christmas because they knew the war wasn't going to finish. So they were giving people leave and they put the hat and you drew out your lots. And I was taking people to railway stations and general duties, really. I enjoyed it because it was better than sitting about like a tank crew with nothing to do but just repetition. As a driver, you keep greasing the same nipples and tightening the same tracks and checking the oil and, you know, repetition, really boring. But driving, I had a job to do and I did enjoy it.
Now, what happened next then? This is the crossing of the Rhine.
Getting across the Rhine, that's right, yes. We move up towards, from Weert, we left from Weert, moved up to the banks of the Rhine, and of course the tanks couldn't cross until the Bailey bridges were thrown. Once they were across and the tanks went, we followed. And then it was skirmishes again, a lot of shell fire from the Jerrys, and roadblocks and delaying tactics, really, Jerry. There was no real front-to-front fight in the main fronts.
And do you remember anything about the advance into Germany then?
Yeah. I remember seeing the sullen people walking about, looking at us, white sheets hanging out all the windows, a lot of damage, bombing and shelling. Of course, you can imagine the people would be hostile. But we followed through, followed the tanks, village to village, and bedded down at night if you weren't on guard, up until we got to the outskirts of Hamburg.
Now, so nothing particular happened as far as you were concerned as a driver. What about, can we talk a bit more about the people? How did you get on with the people? How hostile were they? How did you speak to them?
Well, you weren't allowed to talk to them. Montgomery's order, there was complete non-fraternisation. So they just glared at us and we glared at them.
And did you follow that, did you? I mean, you
strictly, yes. Until the war ended, and then there was a little bit of, shouldn't have been, but there was a little bit more fraternisation once the war was over.
Now, what happened when you reached the outskirts of Hamburg?
Well, I was very lucky then. On the war finished, 8th of May, the actual war, on the 15th of April, I got leave.
So just before the end of the war?
Yeah, 10 days leave on the 15th of April. And we went to a camp in Holland, driven in a truck to the camp in Holland, and we stayed there a night and documented for the... But there were gales, and a lot of mines were loose in the sea. So instead of spending 2 days in this camp, I spent a week. So I was away from the regiment almost to the end of the war. I came home on leave, and when you're on leave, you had to listen to the radio every morning. For sailings, you had a number. And every day, if there were loose mines, sailings were cancelled. So leave number 745, do not report back to, what's the London dock? Tilbury Docks, until the following morning. That went on for 2 or 3 days. I got back to the regiment, and they'd entered Hamburg. I got back to the regiment about the 28th of April, had my birthday at home, 20th of April. Yeah, so I got back about the 28th, and this one of the drivers I got, he died now, unfortunately, he lived at Bournemouth. He was a wonderful man. I got back and he said, "Hello, Smudger, I'll put a brew on, make you a brew. I'll boil some hot water so you can have a shave." And said, "The war's over, the 5th's not seeing any more action." He said, "They're waiting to go into Hamburg now," he said. As he said it, I said, "What did you say?" "Vroom, a German jet came over and dropped a couple of bombs." I said, "You told me the war was over." One of the last throws. But he made me so welcome back, old Jim, and we got on so well. So really, of course, then the war was over.
Now, what about VE Day? How did you celebrate? No,
we were in Hamburg, as I told you, and we were supposed to be to occupy Hamburg. Of course, typical army, orders came round, we're going to move. So we moved up through Schleswig-Holstein into Denmark.
So where were you when VE Day came?
In Denmark.
So were there any celebrations?
None at all, no. We were still operational in a way.
So nothing at all?
Nothing at all, no. As far as we were concerned, it was all over by the shouting.